shoot, they score!
Score!
We have Sidney Crosby!
Put the shot, they score!
This week in the NHL.
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We got to be focused all 60 minutes.
This week in the NHL.
The most arrogant team he's ever played against.
Do you think that's more of a personnel issue or more of a
he's dominating
issue?
Like the Jets wanted him to do.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve. Now Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Richard Pollock on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those listening live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. More importantly, Bell Let's Talk Day here on TSN 1290 on Twitter, really throughout the entire world. Bell Let's Talk Day. That's the hashtag. Know it, love it, use it. We start, of course, with the Winnipeg Jets. Their 5-2 victory last night over the Arizona Coyotes. Gentlemen, Richard, Ezra, good evening, first of all, to you. I would say that the word I would use to describe last night at MTS Center was a cathartic experience for those in attendance and those on the ice, as a week's worth of pent-up emotion, pent-up energy, finally released itself with a dominant 5-2 victory by the Jets. Nikolaj Ehlers with his first career NHL hat trick.
Yeah, and heading into the game, guys, good evening, by the way. It's great to be here for Bell Let's Talk, my favorite day of the year. When you lose three games in a row, as I just mentioned, you knew that the Jets were due for a win, Rich, and I think they were also due for a bit of a goal explosion. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the Ehlers hat trick, and the goals came from only two players, and it's two players that you expected to step it up in a game like that. And you could say that maybe it's too late for the Winnipeg Jets, but they're not looking at it like that. They're looking at it like that was their last game heading into the All-Star break, and they needed a win after some disappointing results against teams in their own division, right? So it was an overall group effort. I think the special teams were excellent. And, I was telling Richie this after the game. To me, that 5-on-3 in the second period, Dustin Byfuglien's goal that he scores shorthanded, arguably maybe the biggest goal of the year for this team, and certainly a very nice goal. And Buff scored a couple of nice goals last night. The fake dump-in goal was also a really nice one. But, it was a game really that I think was long overdue for the Jets. I think especially against the New Jersey Devils, it was a pretty lackluster effort, guys. Saturday night in front of a national TV audience, against a team that, sure, it has been surprising, but certainly a team that was beatable. Give all the credit to Corey Schneider, and Lee Stempniak comes in, Rich, and he scores a couple of goals against his former team. But I mean, it was just nice to see the MTS Center lively again. Mm-hmm. The crowd was was able to experience the hat trick. You saw the wave, even though I know Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com doesn't really like the wave, but you know what I mean. I mean, the fans were. There was life in that building again. Mm-hmm. And there really hasn't been a lot to celebrate in that building, unfortunately. So in that sense, I mean, it was great to head into the All-Star break on a positive note.
Yeah, they played really well. And they played against a team in the second half of a back-to-back with travel, a team that's not very good. And they took advantage of it, and that's what you're supposed to do. And they played that Coyotes defense last night was terrible. Mm-hmm. And just on paper, and I thought the Jets did a great job of getting on them early. And that's what you have to do. I thought that the Jets executed, and as he talks about, special teams, how often does a player get a breakaway on a 5-on-3, never mind a defenseman getting a breakaway on a 5-on-3, and he converts it.
Never mind two breakaway opportunities on the same 5-on-3, or 3-on-5, rather.
But overall, you're executing better, you're making plays, and you're playing with better pace, and I thought, Anthony Peluso's fight at the beginning of the game seemed to give the building a little bit more life than it had before. Fight, and he basically demolished Jared Tenorti there. So
my kidneys hurt on behalf of Jared Tenorti, the number of kidney shots that Peluso was leveling on him.
So I think when you look at it that way, everybody was firing on all cylinders, and it was a great performance. And Connor Hellebuyck wasn't, 34 shots didn't really seem like that many. And the two goals the Jets allowed were just players that fell down, Myers and Burmistrov. Aside from that, they kept stuff, they kept the Coyotes mostly in non-threatening spots, aside from Duclair, who scored at the end, but also created a lot of chances. Guys like Max Domi not noticeable, and Ekman Larson, I thought, got off his game a little bit preoccupied with Stafford and Ladd. So overall, really good performance by the Jets. you know, 8 points back now. It's not unforeseen that they can make a run, but it's very unlikely. And you just wonder what happened the past 2 weeks. I know there's injuries and such, but the effort level, I thought, was lacking. The passion level was lacking. And can they make up for it? Likely not. I mean, they threw away great opportunities to gain ground, playing against teams that weren't that great, mm-hmm. playing a lot of home games. And one game does not make a season. So suddenly last night's victory against a bad team, I think a bad team doesn't, or a poor team, doesn't make up for the fact that you've put out poor performances after poor performances. But it does give you an ability to feel good going to the All-Star break and maybe start off against Dallas next Tuesday on a better note.
And Richie, I think we have to mention how important it was evident how important, I should say, Mark Scheifele is to this forward group, coming back after missing, what was it, seven games,
I believe,
with an injury. Yeah. And obviously the Schwieler line, if you want to call it that, with Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, and Nikolai Ehlers.
Hang on. The Schwieler line?
That's what they were calling it on HNL just before we came on, the Schwieler line. We're
going to have to improve upon that. If that's going to be a line for the next 5 years, like Jets fans would probably hope, you're going to need to improve on the Schwieler line.
Until you have a iconic name like the GST line on your resume, Drew, if you can come up with something better than that,
let me know. I expect more from you, Ezzy, is what I'm saying. I expect more from you than you know the Schwieler line.
Drew, let me tell you something.
You have the All-Star break now. You can work on improving the name of that line from the Schwieler line.
Richie, doesn't Drew know to not expect more of me? Like, he should expect the very least of me. But anyways, I mean, the Ehlers, Scheifele, Wheeler line was excellent.
You.
And, you know, it was nice to see Scheifele get a game in before the All-Star break. Palmer reset it, but you could just see he adds that element of speed that they were lacking, especially Richie without Matthew Perreault in the lineup.
Forget the element of speed, Izzy. He adds skill. Right? I mean, I know they're not exclusive, but I mean, he skates well, but it's the skill level that he adds. I mean, this team had very little skill level in terms of after the top four to five players. So you add a bona fide top six National Hockey League forward, and it changes everything.
Yeah, and you know, Patrice Cormier, Matt Halaschuk, these guys wouldn't be in the lineup if players like Stafford, Scheifele, Lowry were injured, right?
And that's not their fault. That's management's fault for not putting or ownership, whoever it is, for not getting players in place who are better than Cormier and Halaschuk.
Yeah, and you're right, Rich. And you know, it's unfortunate that Scheifele went down with the injury, because of how desperate the Jets have been over the last 3 weeks. It couldn't have been at a worse time, right? Yeah. And so it was nice to see him, and even though Scheifele maybe wasn't at his best, and you could tell at times he was struggling with the speed, but that's understandable when you've been out of the lineup for two and a half weeks.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. So it was a really good line, and I think it's going to give Paul Maurice and the coaching staff something to think about. I wouldn't expect that to be long-term, by the way. I think when Matthew Perreault comes back, you're probably going to see those lines move around, and then Ladd, Little, Wheeler, we could see that again. But, I mean, for now, I think we've seen that line, and albeit it's one game, Drew, mm-hmm. and as Rich mentioned, it was the second game of a back-to-back, so the Coyotes, you know, we were talking about this, you know, post-game yesterday. I mean, a lot of the Coyotes guys, you could tell, they had plans, travel plans. I mean, they were ready for the All-Star break. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of those guys are in Cancun already. But the point being that Ehlers, Scheifele, Wheeler line was arguably one of the most dominant. The performance that they gave last night was one of the single most dominant performances we've seen out of any line this year.
All right, I can't argue with that. I want to talk about your comment, Rich. I'll let you comment on this. You said you don't expect that line to stay together for the foreseeable future. You expect to go that at some point in time, if they're back healthy, Ladd, Little, Wheeler would be reunited, and Perreault, Scheifele, Ehlers, as we saw earlier in the year. Given that, I mean, this team's future is clearly based on Scheifele, Ehlers, and Wheeler, probably as your top three forwards, would you expect to see those three playing together for the remainder of this year? I mean, obviously...
Well, I mean, Little's in there too, Drew, and what happens with Ladd is a factor, and how you're going to... Who you're going to put with those players? You're going to keep the line like they were. I mean, we could project the lines for 5 years all we want. They change every shift, basically.
Of course they do.
And the truth is, we don't have a clue if Ladd's going to be here or not, and that'll be a huge factor as to how the lines are set up.
And when Perreault's in the lineup, Rich, don't you want to spread out the offense too?
Well, partially. I mean, how do you know, does Perreault have any chemistry at all with Lowry? Is there any way to have that third line be a scoring line? Who's playing at center? Lots of decisions to be made there, and still some help needed. But certainly encouraging in terms of top-end players. You saw what skill players could do when firing an all-cylinder with other skill players, albeit against a team that was off its game and not a strong team on paper on defense. But again, I mean, the way they were playing yesterday, I really have no doubts that they'd be effective against other players, other teams, and solid defenses.
Yeah. Dustin Byfuglien's performance last night, I mean, the vision and the intelligence to, I mean, you know, yes, it's a bit of a fluky goal, but he sees the goalie cheating and he's smart enough to...
See, let me stop you there for 1 second, Drew. I don't think it was fluky at all. And what I mean by that is, well, Dustin Byfuglien knew exactly what he was doing.
That's not what I meant by fluky.
It's fluky maybe for Domingue, but... For a player to have that kind of foresight, Richie?
I mean, everybody's getting all crazy about Byfuglien's goal. Like, I mean, if you're a goaltender and you cheat and you get caught, that is an awful goal. That's inexcusable. You should be pulled on the spot. I mean, players try that all the time. He didn't even flip the puck up on edge. He took a shot on net when he noticed the goalie was cheating.
Right.
And the goalie was so...
That's why I don't think it was fluky.
Maybe it wasn't fluky, but it was terrible netminding.
Right, yes, I agree.
I
agree.
I mean, it was a deliberate play by Byfuglien, but, I mean, Domingue just as he... I mean, the puck barely squirted through him. He just as easily makes that save,
that goal is just like,
and nobody talks about it.
The fact that he does that, as he's right, is not unintentional, and he's a smart player. We've known that all along. He is a very smart player. Dustin Byfuglien's hockey intelligence is very high, and his goal was far more impressive to me. It was that goal in the 5-on-3
right.
than that goal that happened to go in. But, I mean... Sure, that indicates that he's a smart player. We knew that. That's just terrible goaltending. It's the other play where he comes in on a breakaway and a 5-on-3 is able to cut in the middle, read the play, and put a top blocker on Domingue, which they seem to be going last night. That is big time hockey. To be able to make that read as a defenseman to get through and skate well enough to create that space and how he shoots off the rush. Like, that is upper echelon talent. The other stuff is great. That's upper echelon talent.
Not to be the party pooper, any concerns about the lack of offense from any of the other Jets forwards there? I mean, Ladd, Little, Stafford were...
I'm not worried about that. Actually, that Ladd moved around the ice as well as I've seen him play in about 15 to 20 games.
And Richie, with the lack of goal scoring that the Jets have had in the last, call it the last month or so, you can't start nitpicking when you score 5 goals, right? So I realize, Drew, what you bring up is valid because there are other players that still aren't scoring. Mm-hmm. I mean, Little struggling. I don't know, you know, what the exact numbers are, but I think he's got 1 goal in his last 14 games, something like that. They're not getting a lot of offense from the defense either this year. I mean, Jacob Trouba had a great game, I thought, and Tyler Myers has been pretty solid, but, you know, we've talked about it. Enstrom hasn't been scoring a lot this year. So, I mean, yeah, you could start nitpicking certain players and say that, you know, they're not having their best offensive season, Rich, but... I mean when you score 5 goals, you can't.
What do you expect? Are you expecting the bottom 6 to create a lot of offense?
No, I'm talking about Ladd, Little, and
I thought Ladd was as engaged and skated as well as I've seen him play, as I just said, in 15 to 20 games. If I was the Jets manager or coach, I would be very happy with the way Andrew Ladd played last night.
Well, let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about Andrew Ladd. Supposedly, there's numbers on the table, as have been reported by TSN. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about numbers for Trouba as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to NHL This Week, rather, on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, or on our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. This segment brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Gentlemen, a couple of different reports regarding some firm financials, some firm offers that have been submitted to both Andrew Ladd and to Jacob Trouba. This is both according to Darren Dreger. We start with Andrew Ladd. It's believed the NHL Jets, the Winnipeg Jets, are comfortable with a 6-year contract extension at around $6 million per season. If the numbers as reported are accurate, are you surprised that the deal hasn't been done at $6.36 for Andrew Ladd?
Well, we don't know what Ladd and his agent are comfortable with, right?
That's
so that's what we're looking at. So, I mean, I'm not surprised because I think we've said all along that there's a good chance that the Jets and Andrew Ladd's camp might be far apart in terms of the amount of years and the total money, right? So, and, you know, Rich did his article on this back in July, and we've referenced it quite a bit. And I think the number that Rich came to was closer to $7 million a year.
Six and a half a year for 6 years.
So in between. So, you know, you got to think maybe that Andrew Ladd and his agent are asking for seven, and that might be the magical number. But
seven is more than Ryan Kesler. Andrew Ladd's a winger. Ryan Kessler's a centerman. You know, it's arguable which player you'd rather have on your team. But, I mean, if Ryan Kessler's contract...
It's arguable which player will age better. It's probably Ladd who would age better.
Right. Kessler's gone
through... Kessler may help you the next year or two better. Ladd will probably age better.
Right. So, I mean, and given the... Sorry, I interrupted you as I continue. I apologize.
Well, no, I mean, you know, and Richie can speak to this too because he wrote the article, but, you know, we just mentioned it. This negotiation has obviously not gone how either side wanted it to go, Rich, or how the fans, I think, perceived it would go. And we talked about this in the summer and throughout the preseason, and we're talking about it now here at the end of January.
It's taken far too long.
Which means that they're still far apart. I mean, until there's a deal. I mean, look at Stamkos and the Tampa Bay Lightning coming in with their offer that some people think is a bit of a lowball offer.
We'll talk about that later. I mean, if that's their offer, they're way far apart. I don't think the Jets, it doesn't appear that the Jets, I mean, we're just speculating, who knows. It doesn't appear, based on the reports, that the Jets are that far apart from Andrew Ladd's cap.
Most important thing, Rich, is how much are they talking at this stage, right? Because the trade deadline's coming up, and unless you're going to sign that contract in the off season, when free agency hits, you would hope that, to me, that's what would be more telling if a deal is imminent. Because I don't think these numbers would surprise anybody at this point.
No, they wouldn't. I mean, it's interesting. I think if you look at it, what the offers the first of all, you have to consider the source. So Darren Dreger is the source, and who he's a reliable source, obviously, but who is his source, right? So where is it coming from that the offer has been leaked? You'd have to think that would be coming from the team because the offer is on the table, and he clearly it appears he has not accepted it yet.
I would agree with your assessment.
Okay? I'm guessing there. I don't have any concrete evidence of that. So you look at, okay, you say that is the number. So, okay, what's the player looking for? I agree that Ezzie is probably in the seven range. So, I mean, if they're $1 million apart per year, and now it's a 6 year, then that's not an insignificant number to be apart, $6 million. Do I think that's a reasonable offer by the Jets? Sure, that's a reasonable offer by the Jets. First of all, the numbers in hockey and sports are in general. So this is in the context of sports being insanely overpaid. So $6 million, is that a reasonable offer? For sure. Is the ask of seven, is it in the realm of reasonable? It's in the realm of reasonable. And six and a half is probably your meeting ground for that. You have to be prepared to pay the player I guess my question is this. If you're willing to pay him six,
what's the difference between six and six and a half?
Why aren't you willing to pay him six and a half? What is the difference for you on the $500,000? Because if you're willing to pay a player six, you think awfully highly of him. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So that makes me say, okay, they probably, if this report is true and we believe it to come from the Jets think highly of Andrew Ladd. So what is the why do they not think he's worth that extra million? I wonder that. I mean, you'd have people tell you they don't think he's worth six. I think on the market says it's six and a half. That's what I think is a fair, reasonable number in the market.
Now, when you wrote that article, and it's a fantastic article, you wrote
before
that article
the season.
Before the season, and with the usual assumptions that the salary cap is going to rise year after year.
Yeah.
This year, it's a big question if it's going to be any higher next year than it is this year. So, I mean, when you wrote that article, six and a half, yeah, that seems reasonable.
Yeah.
Given the climate that you're in today.
And his struggles this year,
where I think most anybody would say that his value has diminished to some extent. I would think I would jump at 6 years and $36 million.
Andrew Ladd.
If I'm Andrew Ladd. I'm Andrew Ladd, I don't know that I go to July 1st and can expect to get more than that on the market.
That's
given,
fair.
Given the lack of salary cap space that teams have, and given the fact that salary cap probably isn't going to rise this season.
That is all fair, Drew. The thing is, in free agency, you need one team.
You need one team.
One team.
You need Bob Murray to overpay Ryan Kesler.
You need one team.
because, you know, if without that contract, if Ryan Kessler signs for 6 years and 30 million,
if Carolina trades a bunch of their guys, and as it's been noted, they need to get to the bottom of the cap,
the salary cap floor.
They might want to pay Andrew Ladd a bunch of money. He played there before. He's familiar with you know what I mean? And just even for example, the cap has a ceiling, but there also has to be a certain amount of money spent within the system.
And that could be what they're banking on.
And it's like you mentioned before, Rich, sports economics, as you know, are not like other economics. Entertainment economics, I think, are the same as sports economics. All it takes, as you mentioned, is one team that wants that player so bad that's willing to overpay $1 million per year. I mean, I think we'd all agree Andre Sequeira probably got a little bit more money than he deserved with the Edmonton Oilers, and they were desperate to get a defenseman, right? I mean, I don't think he's a $5 million defenseman.
No.
I mean, some people might disagree with me, but I think...
Maybe Peter Chiarelli, but probably only him. Maybe his agent.
He certainly hasn't lit it up this year for the Edmonton Oilers, but, you know, I would make the strong argument that you sign both players, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. And right now, even though we're hearing reports that Andrew Ladd has been offered 6 years and $6 million per year, is he going to accept it? That's the big question, and
the question is how long does that sit on the table?
Well, exactly. How long does that?
It doesn't sit on the
sit
table
there and
actually
after
turn into February 28th, at the latest. I mean, you don't know that.
I mean, it could be they just sits there. So many different situations. It could sit there until free agency.
Well, but then you're going to lose him for nothing.
I appreciate that, Drew. I'm just saying, like, there's so many options of what happens here. If you're the team, the thing about Andrew Ladd is an appealing trade deadline acquisition.
Very much.
Why?
So.
He plays left wing. He can play on your first line. He can play on your second line. If you need him to check situations, you can. You play him in all situations. He is two cups. He can fit into your room, it seems like, fairly easily. He can produce. He's played in the playoffs, and, you know, last year, granted, it was only four games, but in his career. So a rental guy who can play and really isn't a high-maintenance guy, doesn't need the puck all the time kind of thing. Those kind of guys are attractive on the market. So there will be a market for him. Dustin Byfuglien, certainly there would be a market for a guy like him as well, but it'd be a different market.
Sure. I think the more interesting contract offer here is the Trouba contract offer.
Let's talk about the Trouba one. This is also according to Darren Dreger. I don't know who Darren Dreger is, but Darren Dreger. The numbers they're hearing on Trouba are close, probably a six-year deal, around $7 million per season, maybe just under, but better than $6.5 million. So somewhere between $6.5 million and $7 million on a six-year deal
for
Jacob Trouba.
In a radio interview, right?
That was a radio interview. I don't have the audio of it, unfortunately. I'd play it, but I don't have the audio of it.
And that was a radio interview and saying that the teams were close?
Close. Like,
that surprises me.
Go on.
Well, that's a lot of money.
You're surprised.
You guys know that I like Jacob Trouba's game. His game is not the same as it was last year, and that's an awful lot of money to pay long term at this point, considering the lack of offense that he provides. I mean, that's big time cash when he has no leverage.
And you're talking like Drew Doughty money there.
He has no leverage. Like, he can't go to arbitration.
Right.
So, I mean, you kind of have him over a barrel there, really. I mean, what's going to happen? He's going to want to play and get paid. And so if maybe you sign him to that bridge deal, you see really what he can produce in those years. If he just dominates, how much more than that will he get?
You mentioned the bridge deal, Richie. For me, if I'm Jacob Trouba, I'm probably wanting the bridge deal.
Well, if you're confident enough in your ability, you're wanting the bridge deal to the extent that you could make more money if you dominate.
Right.
If you want the security and big money, so usually it's security, you're trading that security and taking a little bit less. Based on those numbers, he's not taking less. So if he has security and he's getting all the money he wants, that's what I'm saying. If he dominates the next 2 years, how much more than $6 or $7 million is he going to make a year?
Well, if he goes for 6 years, the contract would expire and he'd be, 27, 28
that's
years old?
Four RFA years, Drew. That's only 2 years of UFA status.
I know. You're saying, well, I mean, it's a lot of money from the Jets' perspective. I get it. But maybe they just, I don't know. For an organization that does seem to be relatively...
I know the perception you want to be able to pay your draft picks. Yeah. I understand that. But, I mean, that's just a lot of cash. on a back end too. I mean, then again, if you're going to talk about that amount of cash for Trouba, then you can't analyze the Byfuglien situation and not take that into account. As he mentions, he'd like to see them sign both players. That's certainly that's an opinion that I could hear out. Okay, if that's the case, you can't have Ladd making six, Byfuglien making seven, and Trouba making seven, can you? What's Scheifele going to make?
Well, we'll talk about Scheifele later on as it relates to Sasha Barkov's new deal in Florida, because there's a lot of parallels there as well. Both of them RFAs at the...
Yeah, but Sasha Barkov's better than Scheifele.
I know, but the numbers. I mean, you don't think that Scheifele's agent is going to use the numbers as the argument that 100%. This is where it's going to start?
100%.
So, I mean...
That's the way it goes. We've said it so many times in the show, the longer you wait, the more contracts are out there to compare to.
Right.
The more recent ones, like the Kessler one.
Well, and if you look at the raw numbers right now, and I agree with you that Barkov's better than Scheifele. I mean, he was a higher draft pick. He's younger than Scheifele by 2 years.
Well, yeah, I don't care if he's a higher draft pick. He's a better player.
Right.
But to your point, he's better. He's younger, and he's better right now.
Right. But the numbers that the Scheifele's agents are going to present to the Jets are going to be the Barkov contract.
They're maybe not going to be exact comparables, Rich, but they're in the ballpark, I think we would say. The two players, at least.
Yeah, young centers off entry-level deals. That's right.
That's where it is. Let's head to break. We'll come back. Dave Feschek of the Toronto Star going to join us, talk about his interesting column on 3-on-3 overtime. A lot more Jets talk still to come on the program. Craig Heisinger at the top of the next hour. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Shortly after 6:30 in the evening, welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program from the Toronto Star, Dave Feschek. Dave, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Dave. Brought you on. You had a great column in Monday's Toronto Star about 3-on-3 overtime and how the bloom is a little bit off the rose there. How just, you know, 3-4 months ago was the greatest thing since sliced bread. But since then, it has been a bit of on a downward spiral. Are we surprised, or should we be surprised, that coaches in the NHL have managed to suck the fun out of 3-on-3 overtime?
Yeah, you know, I had hopes for it. I really did. I thought it was a good idea when it was proposed, and so we saw some decent results out of the AHL last year when they were sort of playing a hybrid 4-on-3, 3-on-3. And I think anything that can reduce the number of shootouts is a good thing. But as we've seen, you know, I watched some preseason games where teams were scoring in seconds. Like the Leafs scored in 16 seconds in Montreal on a preseason game. There were other games that ended in less than a minute in the 3-on-3, and it was a chance trading odd man rush game, and it was a lot of fun to behold. But as the season's gone on, we've seen it become way more of a chess match than a chance trading match. And because of that, because the coaches have gotten their whiteboards out and devised schemes to tilt the 3-on-3 in their favor, at least think they're tilting it in their favor, we've seen the pace slow down, and it's become a lot more plodding and monotonous than I ever imagined it probably would.
Dave, you mentioned in the article the success rate for 3-on-3 overtime has declined since the season started, meaning the amount of games that have gone to a shootout are actually increasing. But when you look at the amount of games that went to a shootout, so in other words, games that were determined in 4-on-4 overtime last year, it was 44%, and now we're at about 59%, I believe. Is the NHL still looking at this as in it's a success? 3-on-3 overtime is at least better than 4-on-4 overtime?
Yeah, I think they are. And I think, look, it is an interesting trend, though, right? It'll be interesting to see where it stabilizes, because the first month of the season, I had Andrew Bailey, our great numbers guy, to start do these numbers for me. So I'm confident they're correct and much better than they would have been if I would have tried to compile them myself. And so in October, there it was a 70% rate of finishing the game in overtime, which was great. Not 70% had been the target that the league talked about trying to hit with the 3-on-3 format. So October went great, but every month since then, that number's gone down. And as you just said, January, I think, as of a couple of days ago, the January success rate was down to 59% 4 months into the season. Now, is it going to continue to plummet, or will it stabilize around 60%, or will we be down toward below 50% as it was in 4-on-4 before much longer? I don't know that. It'll be interesting to see how it does evolve or devolve, as it were. But my suspicion is that the rate could go lower because I think coaches are generally copycat people, and if they see that somebody's having success with a more controlled style, and what we're seeing now is a cycle style where the offensive team gets the puck and just tries to hold on to it as long as possible, essentially to trap the three guys from the other team out there as long as possible and get them tired, because, you know, as we know, the overtime is done with a long change. It's very hard to get to your bench if you're hemmed in your own zone. And so that's why we're seeing that real cycle game where they just try and possess and possess and possess. And then once the opposition's tired, maybe you take a scoring chance and you risk shooting the puck and trying to score. And to me, that's not what, you know, the ideal situation you would hope for, which to me, you know, ideally you want this thing to be a showcase for the skilled players.
And when you look at it, Dave, the shootout is resolving these games. Is there any possibility of an extension of time on the 3-on-3 or eliminating the shootout to try and incentivize it for the players to try and score?
Nah, I think you talk about it. If you wanted a player revolt / outcry / absolute protest, you would increase the length of time in 3-on-3 overtime, because as we've seen, there's been a lot of players who don't particularly enjoy this format to begin with. Guys like Eric Carlson, Dustin Byfuglien have talked about how for the best players, it's essentially just Carlson talked about her very early in the season, said for him it's basically just a bag skate, because when if you're expected to go out there for 2 minutes or 2.5 minutes or 3 minute shift of 3-on-3 after you've already played your regular minutes in a regular season game, well, no one's going to cry for pro athletes, but in that situation you can understand why they might be not particularly amused with the idea of having to go out there and carry more load through an 82 game marathon that's already quite grueling and taxing. So I can't see them extending the time. Carlson has suggested they just go back to the old-fashioned way of ending the games in a tie. I can't see that either, because as the league continues to point out, every time you bring up the shootout, they point out that the fans like it, and that nobody leaves when the shootout's on, and that people generally are excited to see the shootout, as much as I think maybe more hardcore hockey guys are a little sick of it. I think it does have a popular appeal that will probably make it timeless.
We're joined on NHL This Week by Dave Festchuk of the Toronto Star. We're discussing 3-on-3 overtime. Dave, we had Chris King from the NHL's Department of Hockey Operations on our program about maybe 6 to 8 weeks ago. And one of the questions we asked him was about the fact that, you know, tiebreakers for playoff positioning is still regulation and overtime wins. And he admitted that that was an error and something that they probably look to fix next year, just make the tiebreaker regulation wins. If they get rid of that sort of tiebreaker aspect and the importance of getting the win in the overtime, can you see a situation where the coaches are less determined to make it such a structured 3-on-3 overtime and go back to the sort of fire wagon hockey we saw at the beginning of this season?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I hadn't thought of it that way. It is a good idea, and it might incentivize them to do that. But I have a feeling, though, no matter what you do, if there's an extra point on the board, whether or not it matters to the tiebreaker or not, I think the coaches are going to be coaching. And when coaches coach, they like control. They don't like things to be random. They don't like things turning into chance trading opportunities. They don't like players coming down and just firing off shots that could go wide and lead to an odd man rush down the other way. So I think that's the problem here, is that the coaches are just bred to control, control, control. And what we want to see, at least what I want to see, is a little less control from the coaches and a little more control in the hands of the skilled players. But how do you get that when the coaches hold all the cards?
You know, Dave, I always joke around with Rich and Drew about this, and I always say that I'm old school, but I've always said that we should go back to the days of just having tie games. Personally, what overtime format do you prefer? Do you would you go back to 4-on-4? Would you go back to 5-on-5 overtime for 5 minutes and have tie games, maybe have a 10-minute overtime with no shootouts? What would you prefer, and what do you think there's any chance the NHL is going to change this anytime soon?
No, I think you know, to me, it's a pretty easy solution, but it wouldn't be palatable with owners. And it's, you know, you make a regulation win worth 3 points, you make an overtime win worth a couple, and yeah, you have a tie if you need to have a tie, but you do away with the shootout. I don't think you can extend overtime. I don't think you can expect the players to play more and more and more unless you're going to decrease the schedule, because I think that, you know, you talk about how much players value rest. I mean, they've negotiated for next season a 5-day bye week for every team, right, where they're not going to have to play or practice, because that's how much they value rest. They're willing to put that up as a bargaining chip in negotiations with the league, and willing to value that as something that they will bargain for. So players, I understand, don't want more load on their bodies, especially the best players who are already taxed to the limit. So I don't see extending it. But, man, it's funny how things have changed, though, guys. Like, I was looking back at that one season in 69-70 where there were no Canadian teams that made the playoffs, the only season in the history of this league where no Canadian teams have made the playoffs, and we know this could be the second one in the league's history if something doesn't change in a few Canadian markets. You know what the tiebreaker used to be? It used to be goals for. The tiebreaker going into the playoffs was just plain old goals for. So teams were pulling their goaltenders with many, many minutes left just trying to get more goals, because it didn't matter how many you got scored against you. And they had to tweak that, you know, way back in 1970. They finally figured out that wasn't a good idea. So these things constantly evolve, and leagues constantly change the rules. And I guess the sad thing is, to me, in this one, is that the quality of hockey would be a lot better if they went to a three-point regulation game. And I just don't see them doing that, because they like the mishmash that is the standings right now, where teams have at least a perceptible chance of making the playoffs, even when they probably don't.
Yeah, Dave, that's just it. I mean, Gary Bettman talks all about how the parity in the league and everybody has a chance, and really it's a bunch of teams that seem to be the same, and the ones who are really good have a hard time distancing themselves, as you mentioned. So, I mean, if we've basically resolved the fact that there's likely not really a solution to it, does this just continue and the league is, I mean, the league has made changes, but there doesn't seem to be any drastic ones that they could make past this. So are we just resolved with the fact that it's just going to be the way it is right now?
I don't know. I mean, I guess they're always trying to tweak things. It's funny to me, though, that the NHL, you know, given the models that are out there, right, like the NFL and the NBA, they're bigger sports leagues. And what have they done all these years in the boom of pro sports and boom of TV rights that have made these leagues the billion-dollar businesses they are? Well, they've promoted offense, right? They've promoted, as you might call it, fire wagon hockey, or the equivalent thereof, in basketball and in football, right? So quarterbacks rule the NFL and receivers rule the NFL because they put in active rule changes to make sure that, you know, receivers and quarterbacks aren't manhandled. And, you know, Steph Curry can rule the NBA because they put in rules in the NBA to make sure that the skilled talent that is Steph Curry isn't manhandled the way maybe the Detroit Pistons tried to manhandle Michael Jordan back in the 90s. They've made conscious decisions to make sure their stars can shine offensively. And the NHL just never seems to want to do that. And you know, even though they've had, you know, the 05-06 season where they started calling the rule book a little closer on obstruction, they just have never really made the decision to say, look, we want to showcase our star players, our offensive stars, not our grinders. You know, we want to showcase our scorers, not the guys who disrupt the scorers. And for that reason, I know it's not easy, but there are ways you can do it, and they just never really committed to one, in my opinion, or at least haven't committed to it long enough to make a perceptible difference in the quality of hockey. And I think for that reason, you've got a league that a lot of times is way more boring than it should be, given the skill level of the players out there. And I think it's really sad, but I'm not sure we have progressive, you know, eyes and voices in the commissioner's office or in the league office in general that are really thinking that's a problem at all. I think they keep telling us that the product is great. And so I don't see them seeing there being a problem, and that is part of the problem, in my opinion.
Dave Festchuk is a columnist with the Toronto Star. Dave, really appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us on NHL This Week.
Enjoy the fellas. Thanks very much.
Take care, Dave. Thanks again. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Dave Festchuk of the Toronto Star for joining us. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Illegal Curve Hockey is thrilled to be participating in that quality event coming up on June the 5th, 2016. Join Illegal Curve in raising money for the Alzheimer and Dementia Wards at Riverview Health Center by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca or tweet at us at Illegal Curve, and we'll be sure to provide you with that new information. Gentlemen, we talked about it briefly in the segment prior to Dave Festchuk. Alexander Barkov, Sasha Barkov, signs a 6-year, $35.4 million contract extension with the Florida Panthers that buys out a number of RFA years and then a couple of UFA years as well. Barkov will earn $4.25 million when the contract kicks in next season, and it peaks at $7.75 million in the final year of the contract, 2021-2022. Those are UFA years, of course, being bought out at the end there. Barkov, 164 NHL games played, 37 goals, 54 points, 54 assists, pardon me, for 91 points. He will be 20 years of age on September the 2nd of this year. Your thoughts on that amount of money for Alexander Barkov, and then we'll talk about the implications on Mark Scheifele and his next contract.
I mean, I think it's a good deal. No, I think it's a good deal for both sides here, Drew. Barkov gets a security $5.9 million cap hit. You buy out, as you mentioned, four RFA years, two UFA years. He's going to be the number one center there for a long time. It's a great place to live, obviously. I mean, it makes a lot of sense for him. And for the team, I mean, they have a tremendous young player. They get the security of locking him up. They have the financial, the financial security to know not only that you're going to have your top player, you're going to have your top player signed and young, and he's going to grow into that role. He's going to be, what, 26, 27 when it's done?
Mm-hmm.
Still have another huge contract after that. And it makes everybody happy. So out of no wish, I think it's a really good deal.
Is he?
Yeah, I agree. I think I don't think anybody was surprised that Sasha Barkov was signed to a 6-year contract extension. We talked about it during the second segment. You know, and Rich just alluded to it. Barkov is the number one center for the Florida Panthers. He's easily going to set career highs in goals, assists, and points this year. He's already got 31 points in 39 games. The Florida Panthers have been arguably the biggest surprise of the entire NHL. You could maybe throw in the Devils, who were just in town on Saturday, but Barkov is an elite playmaker, and we were at the draft guys down in Newark when he was drafted second overall after Nathan MacKinnon. I mean, this guy has been a prospect for many years now, and it hasn't taken him long to establish himself as a bona fide NHL centerman. And, you know, you look at the young core that they have there that Dale Tallon has put together with guys like Nick Bjugstad and Jonathan Huberdeau and Aaron Ekblad on the back end. I mean, it's a young team there, and they've complemented them nice with veterans like Jaromir Jagr. I mean, this is a key piece for them, if not the key piece, right? Mm-hmm. So the contract makes absolute sense. He's a very exciting player to watch, and I think who else would you rather have to kind of show you, you know, what it takes on a nightly basis, the daily grind of the NHL than Jaromir Jagr? I mean, I think it's just amazing that he gets to learn from one of the greatest goal scorers of all time. I mean, Barkov, I think, has 40 goal, 80, 90 point potential. I really do. And you watch him, and not a lot of people watch the Florida Panthers guys. That's the problem. I mean, the Florida Panthers got a lot of media because they won 12 games in a row. And I'm not saying the Florida Panthers are going to win the Stanley Cup. They could certainly make the playoffs. They're doing pretty well right now, leading the division. But, I mean, why are they doing so well? Well, there's a guy named Aaron Ekblad who would probably have something to say about it. But it's Barkov who has been a very consistent producer for them. And obviously, you know, we talked about other players on that team. You go through the lines. I mean, it's not the deepest team. I mean, this is very much a team that relies on Barkov and Huberdeau and Jágr, the top line there. And, you know, Vincent Trocheck, you know, he had a good night last night. They have a good second line there that he's centering. But back to Barkov, I mean, he's an elite player. And I can understand why Dale Tallon wanted to lock him up right now. I mean, that's a situation where I don't think either side probably wanted a bridge deal, especially the way Barkov has played this year. I think he's earned this contract.
How many players do you want? How many young players are you going to build your team around aside from him? Like Connor McDavid?
Sure. You're saying it's a no-brainer.
It's a no-brainer.
It's a no-brainer. Yeah. Now, the effect of this on Mark Scheifele. Obviously, Scheifele an RFA at the end of this season, just as Barkov was. Neither of them had any arbitration rights. Uh-huh. You look at Barkov's numbers, 164 games played, 91 points. You look at Scheifele's numbers, 194 games played, 108 points. Now, Scheifele is a couple years older, of course.
Uh-huh.
But if you're Scheifele's representatives, aren't you pretty much walking this contract over to the Winnipeg Jets and saying, here's the contract?
Yeah.
And what do the Jets respond with? How do the Jets... the Jets happy to pay Mark Scheifele the same amount of money?
I don't know if they're happy. They'd be happy to lock in a guy that they know will be one of their top two centers. Mm-hmm. I mean, the question for me is, do they think he'll be that number one guy who will take it to the next level for them? I think the Florida Panthers are pretty confident that... that Alexander Barkov is that guy.
75-point guy, a 75-point
guy? The thing about Barkov, Drew, that makes him so valuable is not just the points. Barkov is tremendous defensively. And for a young player and for a young center, to be able to be that good in your own zone, it's so rare.
Sure.
We can look at the stats all you want, and they're a factor for sure. But how much better he is defensively than most young players is next level. So certainly the Jets would argue that in terms of trying to take it down a little bit, plus his age, as you mentioned, some other factors as well.
And Rich, for a lot of people out there who haven't watched him play a lot, maybe Jets fans have seen him at MTS Center but haven't watched a lot of Florida Panthers games. I mean, think Anze Kopitar. I mean, that's the type of player he is. He's dominant. And he might even be better offensively, as he ages than Anze Kopitar. But, you know, Rich makes a good point. He is that type of player that you can put in all situations. And on the power play, he's just as effective as he is in a penalty-killing role. I don't know how much he's been playing in a penalty-killing role this year, but he certainly has that ability. And, you know, Rich makes a point. I think it was maybe a month or two ago we were talking about good comparables for Mark Scheifele. I think if
plays
I'm not
a minute 34 shorthanded per game.
Yeah, so he's able to go out there and play PK as well as power play, Drew, but... You know, I think I came up with Nick Bjugstad and Jonathan Huberdeau as comparables for Mark Scheifele, and if I'm not mistaken, we'd have to check the archives, if you will. I think Rich did mention Barkov. I mean, there are some similarities there, and yeah, again, you know, it's always difficult when you have a player coming off of entry level deal, right? Does the player want a bridge deal? Is it a better fit? Is there the commitment there? I would think that the Jets and True North would like to have both Scheifele and Trouba sign long-term. If that's the case, then sure, the Barkov is a good comparable. Will he get as much money as Barkov? That's debatable.
Like, I can't see them paying him any more than Barkov.
Barkov's deal, by the way, is loaded more towards the end.
Yeah, sure.
Right? So,
which is when the UFA, which is the UFA years you're buying out.
Well, also, it's just a salary cap structure. You're assuming the cap will go up. Assuming.
Oh, right. But
so there'll be more room to move at that point.
Well, but that doesn't matter on a year-by-year basis. It's the AAV that matters.
Right, but in terms of paying out a little bit more cash, sure. I think the owners would care about that more so, right?
Certainly in Florida, they would care about
that. Like the Tyler Myers one was the opposite. They'd rather pay it up front.
Yeah.
I think most teams load it on the back.
Generally
maybe I'm
speaking.
Wrong about that.
Well,
no, I know,
think you're right.
I know your point about the cap hit. I'm talking like dollars out.
Sure, especially in
making more money, paying out more money.
In a market like Florida, I mean, I understand what you're saying.
Ticket prices go up, things like that, so you're able to pay it.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, from the Jets' perspective, it can sometimes be a blessing and it can sometimes be a curse, but a lot of what you would describe as the quote-unquote, you know, the difficult work of creating a contract framework has been done in this case.
That's
for
right.
Mark Scheifele.
You're absolutely right, Drew. I mean, you're looking within $5 to $6 million probably. And it's a matter of where you work within that number. If you're talking about 6 years, for example.
If you want him to go long term.
I haven't looked at deep enough. But then you have your Nugent Hopkins numbers. You know, he signs what his deal, six per year. So you're looking in the range of, okay, that's who his Shifley's representative is going to look at. Nugent Hopkins is going to look at Barkov, and the Jets are going to look at, you know, Bukestads and different guys at the low fours, and they're somewhere in the middle there. You're right.
It seems pretty clear that if you're a top six NHL forward coming off your entry-level contract, there's no bridge contract for you. The bridge contract seems pretty dead.
You'd think so lately. Yeah, I mean, granted, Florida did sign Huberto to a bridge contract, but yeah.
But, I mean, I don't think
mostly not.
Yeah, for the most part, it seems like they're just going straight to the 5-6 year deals because you know.
Alan Walsh is also Huberto's agent.
Right.
And you can see what Walsh is doing with Drouin.
With Drouin. He's lining him up for another payday. In any event, something worth keeping an eye on as the Jets begin negotiations with Mark Scheifele, assuming in the offseason, not anything that's pressing right now.
I think one thing that is interesting is how quickly, or early, excuse me, this gets done here. It provides the team with a lot more clarity if it gets done here.
Sure. Well, Dale Talon's a hell of a general manager. Never really gets the credit he deserves oftentimes for what he did in Chicago as well. But he's a good general manager. He knows what he's doing there in Florida. Let's head to break. When we come back, Craig Heisinger, the assistant general manager of the Winnipeg Jets, is going to join us. We're going to talk about the TSN original documentary, Believe in Rip. It's all part of Bell Let's Talk Day. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to the second hour of NHL This Week with Illegal Curve, the segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper-fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Craig Heisinger. Craig is the Senior Vice President and Director of Hockey Operations. He's also the Assistant General Manager for the Winnipeg Jets. We bring him on today as part of Bell Let's Talk Day to discuss the TSN original documentary Believe in Rip about Rick Rippon. Craig, good evening and thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, guys. It's a pleasure to be on. Thanks very much.
Our pleasure to have you on, Craig. The documentary, of course, it premiered yesterday during the intermission of the Jets-Coyotes game. A fantastic documentary. From a personal perspective, you know, how important is it for you to get the story of Rick Rippon out there, even more so than it currently is here in Winnipeg, where, of course, he's so well-known and his story has been so well-documented, but to get it out there on a national stage, how important is that to you personally?
Well, I don't think I realized how important it probably was until yesterday and today. The support and the support coming in has been absolutely overwhelming. Never would have imagined or pictured what yesterday or today was going to bring since that's aired on during the Jets game and then nationally since then. The outpouring from people and the emotion from people has been something I couldn't have imagined. And I think it's just a small part of trying to remove the stigma from mental health, but I think in some small way it's making a difference. And if it is, Rick would be really happy about that.
Zinger, your interview with Sarah Orleski was obviously a big part of the Believe in Rip piece. Was it therapeutic for you to talk about Rick with Sarah?
Well, it's interesting because the documentary comes off that, you know, I was always there for Rick. It wasn't just me. There was a support group there. You know, Kevin Bieksa was a part of it. Mike Keane was a part of it. Rip's brother, his parents. It just so happened that he played hockey in the city where we had the team that he'd sort of cultivated his whatever persona that he had. But I think it's real important that it's out there now. And I think Rick would have been, you know, I don't know what if he's smiling down on the whole situation, but it's taken up a lot of the day and people seem to be talking about it.
Zinger, Project 11, and can you tell our listeners about it if they don't know about it? And you mentioned the feedback and the support that you've had over the past day and a half. But can you tell listeners about Project 11 who may not know about it?
Yeah, Project 11, I mean, it was a few years coming to fruition. Actually, the Canucks got a little bit of a, you know, they did a good job initially there when Rip's first passing with the Mind Check program. And it took us some time to get our heads wrapped around exactly what we wanted to do. But it was Rick's belief and his passion that when he was 100% healthy, that he wanted to be able to help young kids in, you know, their formative years. And we determined that to be somewhere between grades 5 and 8. And Susie Friesen, the project coordinator, has done a wonderful job of writing the curriculum and getting it into the school system and teaching younger kids the coping skills that Rick was starting to learn later in his life that really started to help him. But maybe, you know, learning those skills that late in life just didn't help him enough. But the opportunity to learn them in your formative years, I know Rick's dad was a believer that had these tools been available for him in his formative years, that the outcome might have been different.
You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN 1290. Our guest is Winnipeg Jets Assistant General Manager Craig Heisinger. We're talking about the documentary Believe in Rip and Project 11. You know, Zinger, about Project 11, you know, we talk about, you know, ending the stigma, and I think, you know, a day like today with Bell Let's Talk certainly goes a long way in doing that. But when you approach the, you know, the education world with Project 11, wanting to get it into schools, how was it initially received? Was it always received with, you know, arms wide open? Were they eager to get to be a part of this and get it out into the open?
Well, when something's new and different, not everybody's, you know, with open arms and willing to try something that's different. But I think of the years have gone by, especially, and I can only speak from my perspective, because the fact of the matter is I didn't know a lot about mental health, and I still, it's just the tip of the iceberg, but certainly with my experiences with Rick, you're immersed in it. And I think more and more people are willing to talk about it, and the school systems are willing to open their arms, because they know it's an issue. And I mean, in today's world is different than when I was a kid. There's just so many more things out there, social media, mm-hmm. those type of things that maybe make you don't feel good about yourself, and you learn coping skills. And today's people running the school system are more the millennials and open and to willing to try these things. So it's certainly becoming easier to get it out there. And I can tell you, I've been received a strong term, but you know, more than a handful of requests from different areas in Canada wanting more information on Project 11 and how they can implement it, or at least get the people in their school systems to talk about it.
You know, Zinger, you mentioned the schools, and you travel to a lot of schools throughout Winnipeg, and it's mentioned in Sarah's piece. And on a day like today, what do you want people to remember and to know about Rick Rippon, not only the hockey player, but the person?
Well, I think Rick Rippon, the hockey player, has been well documented. He was the smaller, undersized guy that found a way or that could. On the personal side, he was an extremely caring guy that really wanted to be able to share his story and help young people, especially kids. He loved kids. He didn't have any of their own, but his hockey schools in Coleman, Alberta were legendary, and he was just a kind, caring person like most of the guys are that sort of play that role on the ice.
Zinger, in terms of, you know, we talk about schools, and I think it's great, and certainly the information you're providing, grades 5 to 8 and approaching it on youngsters and teaching them coping mechanisms at an early age. What about the hockey world? I mean, the hockey world is still very much the kind of that macho culture and not show weakness. How do you approach the teams, you know, the Jets or other teams, or even, you know, the Moose, with players that may face these issues?
Well, I think it's come a long way in 5 or 6 years. I mean, you just watch the social media world today with all the players that are and athletes that are tweeting out with the Bell Let's Talk, mm-hmm. whether it's on Twitter or Facebook or what have you. But I I mean, I can say from personal experience that people are a lot more willing to come out and ask you or talk to you, or at least reach out to somebody that they know of, has dealt with it. I mean, Rick was the first person that I'd ever dealt with, but I get calls or letters from, you know, two a week probably, asking questions, whether it's for them or in third person or what have you. I know at schools when I first started speaking, there used to be maybe 2-3 kids out of a group of 200 or 300 students would wait around and talk to you, maybe feel you out on different social issues or mental health issues. Mm-hmm. Now in the same sort of crowd, 15 to 20 students will wait around and talk to you. So I think it's becoming way more comfortable for adolescents and kids in their teens leading up to 19, 20, 21 to reach out and ask questions about it.
You're listening to NHL This Week. Our guest is Craig Heisinger. Craig is the Winnipeg Jets assistant general manager. We're talking about Project 11 on Bell Let's Talk Day here on TSN 1290. And Zinger, it's coming up on February 23rd. That's the Winnipeg Jets Hockey Talks Night, a game against, I believe, the Dallas Stars, where it's, you know, dedicated to encouraging conversation about mental health. What can fans who are attending that game or considering attending that game expect? Why does that night stand out versus all the other, you know, 41 home games that the Jets will play?
Well, I think there's a focus on it. I think that's why it stands out, and different organizations put different focuses on it. Our focus, because we lived it with Rick, is that's our focus. Project 11, Rick's family, that type of thing. If you're the Ottawa Senators, it has lots to do with Luke Richardson and the passing of his daughters. Mm-hmm. Every organization has a different reason or a different message to support mental health initiative in the league, but I think it'll be a special night, as it is for in every city, for whatever person they choose to honor.
Zinger, you mentioned earlier that there's been interest in Project 11 from outside of Winnipeg, outside of the province, and I know that there's plans to expand the program to more schools in Winnipeg. What's the plan for the future? Is it possible that this project is going to be expanded to schools in other provinces outside of Canada?
You know, I don't have those answers for you. As I said earlier, I mean, the last couple of days has just been overwhelming. We wouldn't have expected or had no idea to expect the interest that we've received in the last day and a half. I think when the end of the week comes, we're going to have to sit down and digest all the interest and all the emails and all the information people are looking for on Project 11 and see where the next little while takes us. But as I said, these last 2 days have been a whirlwind, and for me to be able to share without talking it through with Susie Freeze and Mark Chipman and the rest of Project 11 wouldn't be very prudent at this time.
Craig Heisinger is the Winnipeg Jets assistant general manager. Zinger, really appreciate your time this evening. Thanks for joining us here on NHL This Week on Bell Let's Talk Day to speak so eloquently about Rick Rippon and Project 11, and we'll talk to you again soon. Really appreciate your time, Zinger.
Can't thank you guys enough for taking the time to have me on. Thanks so much.
Take care.
Thanks a lot, Zinger.
Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Craig Heisinger, Winnipeg Jets assistant general manager, for joining us here on Bell Let's Talk Day to discuss Rick Rippon and discuss Project 11, the Winnipeg Jets' tremendous mental health initiative. This segment brought to you by the Rady Fitness Center, official fitness facility of Illegal Curve Radio. With 52,000 square feet of gym space, new equipment, and a saltwater pool, get back in shape and reclaim your glory days at the Rady Fitness Center. For details and to save up to $100 off a new membership, visit RadyJCC.com/IllegalCurve. Got to get back in shape right there, Ezzy?
What are you talking about? I'm in shape.
I know. I just like to play with you a
little bit. I am in terrible shape right now. I need to be in a gym 5 days a week. Like, what? I need to have like a team of personal trainers working with
me. It takes a team. It's not even one-on-one training. It's one-on-three training. It's like you have to play a bit of a zone defense to make sure you don't run away from them. It is a bit of the problem.
You have to make sure I'm not within like a mile radius of a Burger King or something like that.
Tampa Bay Lightning. According to Elliot Friedman, he reported this on Saturday, that the Tampa Bay Lightning have offered Steven Stamkos a 8-year, $68 million contract extension. an average annual value of $8.5 million. If he was to sign that kind of contract, that would put him below Taves and Kane, the new deal signed by Kopitar, Ovechkin, Malkin, Subban, Sidney Crosby, Corey Perry, and leave him tied with Henrik Lundqvist, obviously a goaltender, not a forward. Is this offer embarrassing, as one national pundit described?
Well, I mean, okay, again, so what Glenn Healy called it embarrassing, and so therefore, I mean, again, are you talking about it in the context of hockey contracts?
Obviously, we're talking about it in the context of hockey contracts.
Okay, so if you're talking about the context of hockey contracts, it probably was, it's insulting to Steven Stamkos in context if it's the final offer. If that's a final offer, you know that he's never going to accept that contract, and you might as well not offer him one. Really. You know, sure. It's one of those. It's, you know, it's, you hear about free players in the league, say free agents say, if a team's trying to retain him and they give him a way below market offer, it's more insulting than saying, we appreciate the work you've done here, but we're going to move in a different direction. You know, it's like anybody at their job. If you offer way less than somebody is worth or think they're worth, then you might as well just tell them to move forward.
Sure.
So, if that's the case, and again, I realize it's 60 whatever million. If that is what we've waited so long to see the offer be, well, I mean, first of all, I've said for a while that I don't think he's going to sign in Tampa. I think he's likely going to end up in Toronto, but I don't think he's going to re-sign in Tampa. If he was going to re-sign, he would have been signed by now. And this news, again, one thing I want to get back to, and we talked about it on the lads stuff, who releases this news?
This kind of news, I would suspect, was released probably by the agent for Stamkos.
You would guess,
I would guess that because it's an insulting offer. So
if you deem it to be insulting, the agent acting for Stamkos likely would deem it to be insulting, and he'd probably want it out there for leverage and PR purposes. So that's what you have to guess.
You know, I got to say, guys, I mean, I realize this type of news is great for guys like us who have a hockey radio program, but I kind of see all of this news coming out, and I kind of wish this stuff didn't come out. And what I mean by that is you kind of just wish you'd hear about it when the player signs, if he doesn't sign. I mean, all of this stuff, I mean, to answer your question, Drew, is this offer embarrassing? Well, the offer was $8.5 million a year. That's a lot of money. It's a little bit more than I make on an average basis. But is he worth more than $8.5 million a year considering some of the other players that are making nine upwards? Is Steven Stamkos the best player in the NHL? I would say he's one of the best players in the NHL, probably not the best player. I know Richie right now thinks Tyler Seguin is. I mean, you probably put Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin, Patrick Kane, a few others, but he's certainly top 10 best forward in the NHL. I think we'd all agree with that. I mean, the guy has four 40-goal seasons. Mm-hmm. He's got three 90-point seasons. He's got a 60-goal season under his repertoire. The Tampa Bay Lightning just went to the Stanley Cup Finals. I would say, with the exception of maybe Alex Ovechkin, he's the best pure goal scorer in the NHL. And there's a few others that are in the conversation.
Yeah,
point being, he's probably at least a $9 million player, $9 million per year player. You could even argue he's a $10 million a year player. So in that sense, it is a bit embarrassing for Steven Stamkos to get that offer, because you'd think a guy who was drafted first overall and who has been the face of this franchise since he came into the NHL in 2008, you'd think that they would give him exactly what he's worth. So is Stevie Y playing a little bit of hardball?
Well,
absolutely he is.
They may think he's worth that.
They
don't seem to be as enamored with him as the rest of the hockey world is, and they may think that's exactly what he's worth. And they may be right, Drew. They may be right, but it's not going to get done.
No. I mean, your point is, you're right. If that's what you think you're worth, then your point going back to is you might as well not make an offer because it's not going to get it done.
This year, I guess the question is, did this past few months change that? Because if it didn't, you're into risky territory, because unlike the Jets, we talked about the risks the Jets faced. If the Jets were to be in the playoffs and not have these guys signed, they're between a rock and a hard place. Tampa's between a rock and a hard place. But the difference is that Tampa has Stanley Cup aspirations. I don't think the Jets had those aspirations.
And Richie, I realize we talk a lot about contracts on the show, and especially in a year where Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien are pending UFAs, we talk a lot about it. But it goes back to what we were talking about during the first hour, sports economics, right? I think in this day and age, and it's not just this day and age, it's really for the last, 15, 20 years, especially since the first lockout in the NHL, we throw around numbers of like half a million, million, as if, you know, we're throwing around pennies
here. Oh, I know.
Well,
we
know. I mean, if you want to play devil's advocate, you look at Sidney Crosby, who ironically makes $8.7 million a year.
Sure.
And Stamkos was offered $8.5 million. Overall, I still think Sidney Crosby is a better player than Steven Stamkos.
Crosby, I think it's safe to say Crosby's underpaid. Commensurate right. to his value.
And he signed that deal quite a few years ago.
Right.
But
yeah, Crosby's better than Stamkos.
But again, you could look at it and you could say, is he worth nine? Is he worth 9.5? I mean, it's so difficult, and that's why these negotiations seem to be so contentious, because
he's
over
the
long term,
leverage
Rich,
though, is he?
He does.
Never mind Andrew Lett. Somebody's going to pay Steven Stamkos.
Well, somebody's going to pay him $10 million a year. There's no question. He's going to get 7 years and $70 million, which takes me to my next point. Joe Smith of the Tampa Bay Times with a really interesting piece looking at, you know, what is a 7 year, $70 million contract worth in places like New York, Detroit. He used New York, Detroit, St. Louis, Nashville, and Toronto. And he looked and the, versus an 8 year, $68 million deal in Tampa Bay. When you factor in, the agent fees, the taxes, the state taxes, and any jock taxes that exist in a lot of these cities. And it turns out that net income at the end of the 8 years, he's actually ahead staying in Tampa Bay with the $68 million offer than he would be with a bigger offer in any of those other cities.
Yeah, but there's a couple of things there. Money is a factor in terms of I make more than you in the room.
Sure.
And playing in New York or Toronto has far more attractiveness endorsement-wise than Tampa Bay.
How do you figure? I mean, Steven Stamkos is on a Bauer commercial or whatever it is now.
You don't think he gets more publicity in New York or Toronto?
Do I think he gets more? He probably gets more, but I don't think it's stopping him right now from getting publicity.
It's not stopping him, but I think it certainly has an effect. If he goes to Toronto, you don't think he'll make more money than he's making now?
Probably.
If you factor in off-ice
endorsements, probably.
For sure.
But if you take away the off-ice endorsement factor, I did find it interesting that based on taxes and everything else.
And then don't think, I'm assuming, Drew, that that has been in the pamphlet of UFA pitches for the past 20 years. And if not, then the teams have been behind the times.
To Florida, you're saying?
Yeah,
of course. Only actual city that he makes the most money he can make is actually in Nashville, where he would make net at the end of a 7 year, $70 million contract, he'd have net $37.8 million.
These guys want to make more money than the next guy.
Sure. Well, it's about
and
ego.
The PA wants him to make more money than the next guy.
It's all inflationary.
The PA would say, sorry, before you get on, the PA is going to say, not everybody can play in Tampa and Nashville. So we don't care what net is.
Yeah. Well, guys, getting away from, you know, the specific, you know, dollar figures right now, if I'm the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I would simplify this down to this. If I'm the Tampa Bay Lightning and Steve Yzerman, can I afford to not sign Steven Stamkos? The Tampa Bay Lightning have struggled this year. Uh-huh. And I realize Tyler Johnson, Nikita Kucherov, Andre Pilat, Victor Hedman, I mean, all these players, I mean, they've got a good nucleus there.
For sure.
How much does it set your franchise back if Steven Stamkos isn't on that roster? He's not having maybe as good of a year as he had previously. He's still got 20 goals and 37 points. Mm-hmm. He's still a top producing forward in the NHL, and probably by the end of the season he'll be around the 70-point mark.
Well, he scores 30 goals in his sleep.
Right, and he's traditionally been a bit of a slow starter, right? So, I mean, you look at that roster, and I just don't know how you can afford to lose a guy of that quality. You're never going to get a guy like that back.
I don't think he would accept a trade right now.
Not anywhere close to...
Well, if he doesn't accept a trade right now, then there's a lot more going on there than you'd think.
I mean, I suspect that'll come out eventually on February 29th if he's still a member of the Lightning and doesn't ever get signed.
I mean, the only way that makes that is something that defensible in my... Well, I guess you talk about the no trade and stuff, but... The situation, if you knew it was coming to a head like that, then it should have been dealt with earlier. Only way is if you win the cup.
Richie, I've disagreed with you quite a bit. I still think there's a strong chance he signs, and I don't think he'll be traded.
I just don't get that vibe, Ezzy. There's something about him talking about it. There's something about it just doesn't sit right with me.
Well, and when he was confronted...
He can do whatever he wants. It just doesn't sit like it's going to be a Tampa reunion there.
Well, Richie, you have nothing to worry about because I'm wrong most of the time anyways.
Well, no. I mean, Ezzy, I don't know. You might be right. I mean, it might just be all you know, chit chat that doesn't really end up meaning anything. But I just, if you watch him, if you're just looking at body language wise, forget the numbers for a second. Yeah. He seemed like a guy who, you don't usually get to that point if you're that invested.
No. I mean,
like, I know he plays hard. He's trying to win. But if you're long term in that market, I sense something.
Did Crosby or Ovechkin ever get anywhere this close to unrestricted free agency?
Okay. Yeah, that's right. That's fair.
And I mean, so if you know, if
something
you,
about it.
I agree with you. I agree wholeheartedly with you. I think he's.
I just think there's
out.
Still a chance that he signed. I didn't say he'd necessarily sign. I just still think there's a chance.
Sure, anything's a chance. I mean, you're not wrong. There's a chance, but I don't. I'd be surprised if he signed.
There's a chance that I become a rocket scientist.
No, there's some things that aren't a chance. That would be one of them, I suspect. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about a contract extension, not for a player, but for a general manager. See how we change things up there? You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. It's 7:30 in the evening. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors and all week long, K. Trevor Wilson is in town. He's the winner of the 2015 Male Stand-Up Comic of the Year in Canada, if I'm not mistaken. The 2015 Canadian Comedy Award winner for Best Male Stand-Up, to be perfectly accurate. Give us a call, 780-1290 right now. You can win two tickets to see K. Trevor Wilson this coming Friday night at Rumors, 780-1290. Two tickets to see K. Trevor Wilson.
Caller three?
Sure, caller three.
Let's do it.
780-1290. Talk to Al. Al will hook you up with those tickets.
Caller Sergey Boughton.
Sure, caller Sergey Boughton. That's a good way of putting it.
By the way, I
thought you were calling Al Sergey Boughton for a second. I was a little confused, but now I understand the reference.
By the way, Drew Stamkos just scored number 21.
Well, there you go.
So he's going to sign in Tampa.
Is that how it's going to be? Anyways, speaking of signings, Chicago Blackhawks general manager Stan Bowman is signed to a 3-year contract extension. He keeps him with the Blackhawks organization through 2020-2021. You know, he's been vice president, general manager the past 6 years. He's been the team for 15 years. Youngest GM in NHL history to guide a team to the Stanley Cup in 2010, and he's won 3 cups in total. Is he underrated? Is he, you know, is he sort of underappreciated for what he's done with the Blackhawks?
Is everybody underappreciated these days, Drew?
By the way, Rich,
why is he underappreciated?
Is the term underrated overrated?
Yeah.
See, I find you guys underappreciate me, so I'm projecting a little bit onto everybody else.
You're definitely underrated, Drew.
Thank you.
Me and Rich were overrated. We're washed up.
I mean, what do you want to, that Stan Bowman doesn't, he's pretty out there, Drew. I think he gets a lot of credit. I mean, the guys who won 3 cups get a lot of credit for those 3 cups. He's had a part in those 3 cups. He didn't necessarily put it all together, but he's kept it together. I think that's important.
But when you think of the best general managers in the league, and I think you'd have Ken Holland high on your list, Richard.
I would, yeah.
And you'd have Jim Neal high on your list, Richard.
Yes, I'm a big Jim Neal fan, yeah.
Do you put Stan Bowman up at that level? And if not, why not?
Lombardi's up there too.
Okay. Well, you know, go. You know, you
I can... think Bowman's for sure in the conversation. I just, when you look at the team, I don't want to hold it against him, but I mean, he became the GM when they already had Kane, Taves, Seabrook, and Keith on the squad. So you have to make moves, and he's in the conversation for sure.
Did Talon acquire Hossa, or did Bowman acquire Hossa?
He's for sure a top 10 general manager, I think. We're definitely part of the conversation. That is a good question, Izzy. I'm trying to remember. Think
I feel
about
like Hossa was
me.
Still a Talon signing.
I will check
trade.
Right now.
And it was a signing.
It was a signing. It's when he went to Detroit-Pittsburgh, reverse of who won the cup.
Hossa joined them in 2009-2010. So that would have been Bowman.
Just double check it while I'm talking here.
Okay, go ahead.
But you look at, as a whole, I mean, did he pick the right guys? You know, you keep Versteeg and you deal Byfuglien, who obviously is going to get paid, and you deal Ladd, and you know, you make moves like Patrick Sharp here. I like the fact that he acknowledged the fact that those two players he brought in didn't fit in. So he's made some moves that are questionable. Look at Johnny Oduya has worked out so well. So he's done some nice things. But I mean, and I think he's certainly a really good GM, but I don't think just because he's won the three cups, he's suddenly the best GM in the league. Go ahead, Drew.
Hossa signed with the Blackhawks on July 1st, 2009. Stan Bowman was named general manager on July 14th, 2009. That would have been right after the fiasco with the offers and everything else.
Whose responsibility that was is a whole different ballgame. But so if you look at it that way, I mean, if technically he's not GM there, who knows what's calling the shots in any organization, really. But the five core guys who won the cup, won three cups for them, none of which were technically his moves.
Right, and you have to look at his work as a whole, right, Rich?
Yeah.
And that includes overseeing
the drafting and the development.
I'm not trying to discredit him. No, absolutely not. He's done an excellent job keeping that core together and surrounding that core with other good players. Now, to now put him in the same echelon as the upper GMs, and again, I hate to do this where you rank whether it's GMs or coaches. I'm not a big fan of these lists of top guys and everything like that. I prefer to do that with players. Certainly, it's better to do, even though that is super subjective. But I think for him to be at the Kenny Holland level, I mean, Stan Bowman just hasn't been doing it. It's funny because with Scotty Bowman there, who is obviously very familiar with Ken Holland, but to be at that level, he just hasn't been doing it for very long, right? He's been a GM for 5 years now, and Ken Holland has been a GM for much longer and has just accomplished a lot more. And I'm not just talking about the Stanley Cups, but, you know, the way he has kind of molded a franchise, right? Mm-hmm. So, again, he's obviously an excellent GM. He's won a couple of cups, three cups there, in fact, two as GM. But when you look at, you know, I agree with Rich, you know, some of the players he's inherited when he was working under Dale Tallon, right? But, I mean, you have to give him credit, I think, especially, you know, this year, he's made moves that, you know, he doesn't like
you
a player.
Panarin, and, I mean, that's a great move.
You know, Panarin,
great
bringing move. Panarin over from Russia. And, you know, I think getting out of a tricky situation with Brandon Saad, being up against the salary cap, you know, not having enough money to sign a guy like Marcus Kruger. I mean, I think Stan Bowman is a smart guy.
I agree with that. He's been good on contracts, I think, for the most part.
Right.
He's done a real nice job making it work. You're right about that.
But, again, I wouldn't personally put him in Kenny Holland territory. I'm with Rich. I mean, I think Kenny Holland is the best GM in the NHL. But that doesn't mean that he's not a good GM. I just think when you're talking about the elite GMs, I would throw Ray Giroux in there. I know, you know, it didn't end very well in Pittsburgh, but look what he's done with New Jersey in, what, 6 months? I think he's done an excellent job bringing in certain players. So, I think it is a no-brainer that he was signed to this contract extension. I think Stan Bowman has done an awesome job in Chicago. I think, you know, that should
focus. Once they got Joel Quenneville done, you know he was getting done.
Right.
Sure. I mean, nothing about this contract extension is a surprise, and I don't want to make it seem like I'm surprised by it or anything.
They could win a fourth cup this year, Drew.
They're
still one of the best teams in the league.
For sure they could, Drew. For sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about
it. He's done a real good job. I just don't think it's not like...
So you're docking him marks, because the core of the team was somebody else is doing?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it doesn't mean I'm putting him in a negative category.
You have to.
You have to account for the fact, Drew, that he took over a team with some of the Hall of Famers.
Sure, but in this
how many Hall of Famers are in that group? Four.
Yeah.
I don't know if Seabrook is, but Hossa, Taves, Kane, and Keith are all going to be Hall of Famers.
Sure.
Four.
No disagreement.
Does anybody disagree with that?
At least four.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least four. I would agree with that. And, you know, but... How do I want to word this? Let me think. Doesn't he deserve more credit for, in this day and age where you see teams having to, you know, not being able to keep their core together, that he's been able to keep all five of these players under contract?
Yes.
The key members.
Hold on.
He deserves credit for that.
You definitely deserve credit for it. But again, let's see if you want to delve deep into it. He just signed Seabrook to that big deal. Okay, signed Taves and Kane to those big deals. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not giving him credit for the Hossa deal, who knows what happened before he got let go? Hossa was signed to a long-term deal before, so that was already on the books.
Sure, that's fine.
And he signed these other guys to deals in the past year to these big contracts. The jury's still out. I think everybody in this room would have given those contracts for the most part. Maybe you could argue on the Seabrook one a little bit more, but the jury's still out on whether those are going to be great contracts. But of course, you keep them together.
Well, I think, Drew, what you're trying to say in another way is also, he's been able to keep not ha- he hasn't had to trade one of these core guys.
Yeah, and he's always been able to find, or him and his scouting staff have always been able to find replacements for the guys that they've had to trade away. I mean, this is a franchise that is, you know, traded away some quality NHLers and been able to replace them with other quality NHLers, yeah, but, be it through the draft or be it through
really
Panarin.
Like, how many guys?
Well, Andrew Shaw.
Yeah.
Teravainen.
Yeah.
Panarin.
Yeah, no, Panarin. There's good moves, but I mean, if you look at the back end, they played four defensemen all year last year.
Right.
Three. And Oduya was the acquisition, don't get me wrong, but the other three guys.
That's where I think they'll feel it the most. Richie, when they get into the playoffs. And I think Trevor Van Riemsdyk is a very good young defenseman, but I think they're going to feel it, especially
can't
not having Johnny Oduya.
You know what I mean? Zone, yeah.
I think the defense has definitely taken a hit. I mean, not Keith Seabrook or Jalmerson, but with Oduya, having to move him to Dallas.
He was right on Corey Crawford. He was right on Corey Crawford, you know, when there was all the talk about between Crawford and who was it? Was it Niemi? Yeah, he was right on Corey Crawford.
Corey Crawford's been good. I mean, it's not a he's not Carey Price, but
he's not Carey Price, but he's going to be on Team Canada for the World Cup.
You think so?
Yeah.
So Hopi, Price and Crawford, do you think?
I think so.
Now, Hopi and Price are shoo-ins.
Yeah, and Crawford's the third of that group, but for this, you know, for a guy he's been able to, you know, he put his cards behind. Yeah,
Crawford's been a good netminder, Drew. I mean, I would feel very uncomfortable if I actually cared about the World Cup with him in between the pipes in the big game, but he's won cups. That's what you do. Stan Bowman's done a real nice job. Usually a GM who wins three cups is like otherworldly and he's Hall of Famer, no doubt about it. And I think in this case, there has to be qualified. That's our gig here is to point it out. It has to be qualified.
That's why I was asking.
Dean Lombardi, I mean, built that Kings team. It's his team.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It took a long time and a lot of patience, but he built that team. So he gets more credit from me, even though he's got one less cup, he gets more credit for those two cups than Bowman would for these three. That's what I just want to say.
Let's head to break. When we come back, the rumor roundup from around the NHL as we are just over 1 month away from the trade deadline. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. To John Beluda, he won the two tickets to Rumors Comedy Club, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. He's off to see K. Trevor Wilson this coming Friday. Stay tuned on Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll have another pair of tickets to give away to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark. And this coming weekend at Raw Almond, the restaurant at the Forks. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home, eat in a full-service restaurant, or eat at the Forks. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Richie, you were at Raw Almond for Bernstein's breakfast on Sunday last week. Your thoughts?
I didn't see you guys there.
I have a child at home. It makes it a little bit more difficult to get up.
Sorry, Drew. I mean, why don't we?
I'll tell you what.
I didn't see either of the two other guys on this show at Rom at Bernstein's on. So it's not actually on the river this year because the river obviously it's +3 outside right now.
Yeah, it's raining.
So it's on the walking. So people know it's behind Johnston Terminal on the walking bridge.
Yeah.
In a tent. It's an awesome. We did it last year. We went last year on the river. This year, it's on the walking bridge. It's awesome.
I thought it was by the running bridge.
Well, you can run or walk. You can actually even skate, I think, on that bridge.
Yeah.
And so it was great. It's a cool experience. It's worth it. And let me tell you, it's $35 and it's tax and tip included. If you knew that, I actually didn't know that this week. So when I paid the bill, and it
I
says
really
it right there,
I'm just
an idiot.
Right,
it says it on the sign. I gave an extra tip to the server. I mean,
lawyer money.
No, Andrew. I mean, it's just like you want to be generous on top of it. You think, okay, you know, it's out. It's nice. It's, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of overhead. Apparently, it's a big tip.
So what you're saying, Richie, if I'm clear here. I'm
pretty sure I tipped 35%.
You double tipped.
Am I in Sweden right now?
Two tips for the price of one? Is
you
that what happened?
You unknowingly double tipped.
High taxes.
Well, no, it wasn't unknowing. He just doesn't know how. He just doesn't have reading comprehension. It was clearly right there. You said that
it was right there a number of times. Yeah, I mean, on the sign. If you're on social media, which I'm not, it's on there too.
Yeah,
you're on Snapchat.
Aside from all that, though, it was a great experience. So I encourage people to go. I was at Bernstein's today. In fact, also didn't see either of you guys there.
Someone's doing well.
Supporting.
That's very good. You can no criticism from me right there.
I'm going to try to go this weekend. This past weekend, I was really busy with my workout schedule and my engagements and all that. So I didn't get to go last weekend. And I haven't had a chance to talk to Aaron, but everything I've heard is that the reviews are awesome. Everybody's having a great time. The weather looks like, well, unless it's freezing rain. But regardless, the weather's...
You're in a tent, though. It's a sealed environment. The tent is weatherproof.
There's no seals in the sealed environment, though.
I don't think that they're serving seal or that seals are
greeting
you.
There's no seal on the menu, guys.
No, there's no seal on the menu. So, anyways, it's good to know that. That's Bernstein's Deli at Raw Almond this coming weekend. Check it out Saturday and Sunday, your last opportunity. And, of course, at Cordon Village Mall all the time.
I want to talk more about Drew's parenting, I think.
Well, I was very proud.
I understand, Drew. You can't bring a baby into the tent?
You can. The baby's...
It's a sealed environment.
The baby's awake for like an hour and then takes a nap. But
okay, so they can't sleep on the bench?
Well, it's kind of uncomfortable to put a baby on a bench, Richard.
No, it's in one of those carrying things.
What kind of father are you putting a baby on a bench? And
well, you have one of those things that you carry around.
Richie, I got to give Drew credit on that one. I mean,
don't you know you carry around the baby and she's protected and warm and all that. What, people don't take their kids out, Drew?
They don't typically take them.
Are you starring in the movie Room?
That's very clever. I'm shocked you know about the movie Room. It's a pretty offbeat indie flick right there, Richard.
I saw you at one of the Jets games. You had Aaron on one of those little kind of baby sacks in front of your...
I have to give credit to our good friend Kyle Kozier. I see Kyle K. He sent up for Aaron some very nice UND baby gear. So she's got her UND outfit. She's got some other, you know, nice clothing. Richard has bought her a terrific outfit. I got to say, Ezzy, it was her 4-month birthday just this past weekend. Still waiting on that birthday, on that gift from you there, Ezzy.
I knew you were going to throw me under the bus here. You will get the gift.
For her first birthday or her bat mitzvah? What's it going to be?
I'll step up right now. I will guarantee, and we can play this on Saturday if you want.
Okay.
You will have a gift by Saturday.
Like end of show Saturday or start of show Saturday?
No. Like by, on a Friday because...
You can bring it to the show Saturday. That's fine too.
Aaron is easily my favorite member 40% of the Mandel family right now. And that present
he's had 4 months to get it done.
There's a 40% chance
I'm
that
busy.
Happens.
I'm doing pre and post. I mean, I've
Did
got
you do
all...
pre and post in December?
Well, I mean, I got one coming up in February.
He's been mentally preparing for that.
I mean, come on. Anyways, Aaron will get. Okay. I had to make sure I've been doing a lot of online shopping, and I had to make sure that my gift was certainly better than Richie's gift. I don't know if I can top.
Does DraftKings count as shopping?
and really, giving a baby a gift card to DraftKings is not appropriate. Not appropriate. Just like putting a baby on a bench to sleep.
Car seat,
not
Drew. It's a car seat.
Drew, tell Laura that a gift is coming, and I'm certainly not doing it for you. It's going to be for Laura and for Aaron.
I never thought for a second it was for me.
You're getting that gift.
Well, earlier off air, we had a conversation. I explained to both of you guys that she rolled over for the first time today, and neither of you were really that impressed by that accomplishment for a baby.
I don't know. That's what babies do. They roll over.
They only roll over after a certain milestone. It takes them a number of months to get to the rolling over stage.
By the way, we're obviously throwing away whatever we were going to talk about
here.
What
were we
going to
talk about here?
The trade rumors from around the league.
Oh, okay.
We'll still touch on that.
It was actually Richie going to be rumor roundup, but it's actually turned out to be daddy roundup.
Start with the New York Rangers and Keith Yandel. According to Larry Brooks of the New York Post,
Brooksy,
the Rangers need to figure out exactly how they want to use their defensemen down the stretch run and into the playoffs.
Get that through your thick head, Brooksy.
Brooks said that the Rangers need to make a decision on Keith Yandel and how much they want to feature him. If they decide the best choice is to move him, Yandel could create a bidding war among Western Conference teams. Brooks also said that if he could net Andrew Shaw from the Chicago Blackhawks, it would be a no-brainer for the New York Rangers.
Well, I mean, okay, so the reason that Yandel is attractive is because he's a puck-moving defenseman. The reason that he's more attractive is because Arizona ate half of his salary and part of that deal, so his cap is minimal, especially as a pending free agent. Chicago will be able to handle him. I see Andrew Shaw as a bigger part of that team, so that would be surprising, and Larry Brooks might just be tossing out names. But Keith Yandle, see, Keith Yandle at his full ticket is less attractive because he's his drawbacks defensively. But Keith Yandle not eating as much into your cap, and again, more room as the season goes on, so lots of these teams have more room under the cap. His offense at the clip that he's at right now is great value, and you can fit him in, and then you'd want to protect him in defensive situations if you could. Now, you need to have solid defensive defensemen. You can't add him to a team with a bunch of other offensive defensemen, I think, because then it just adds to your liability.
Would the Blackhawks be a good fit for that?
Yeah, of course. For sure they would, because A, he can move the puck.
Sure.
And B, they can put him with a guy like Chalmerson, who's a tremendous defensive defenseman.
He's pending unrestricted free agent at season's end, which is another factor.
That's why they'd want him, Drew. I mean, it's kind of like there's a benefit to having that money off the books. That's why I think like Shaw seems odd.
And for Chicago, that's a rent-a-player situation.
Right. I mean,
Chicago's not signing Keith Yandle long-term because of the fact they
absolutely
have Keith
not.
And Seabrook signed long-term and Jarmelson. But you look at Keith Yandle and you forget he's only 29 years old. I mean, he's moved around a little bit here in his career, and the Rangers gave up the first-round pick and Anthony Duclair, and it turned out to be a great trade for their Arizona Coyotes. And we just talked to Don Maloney on Saturday, but I mean, Keith Yandle, the type of offense he provides, he would be desirable for a lot of teams in the Western Conference. I look at like a team like the LA Kings, who could always use more offensively inclined defensemen, even though they've got a few good ones there, and Christian Ehrhoff and obviously Drew Doughty. And Jake Muzzin's turned into a pretty solid offensive defenseman too. Maybe not as good of a fit as Chicago, who's more established, I guess, on defense, especially with their top three there. But point being, Keith Yandle, that type of player, whether he's a pending UFA or not, Richie, a lot of teams will make that move if the price is right.
I guess the question, he mentions Western Conference teams. Look at the Western Conference. I mean, how many teams really do want to acquire him? And what would they give up?
Well, I mean, how many Western Conference teams besides, I mean, I guess Dallas still has.
That's the team I was looking at.
Yeah. I mean, because they're in need of defensemen. Now they're.
But I mean, don't you want a little more of a two-way defenseman?
You would if you're Dallas.
He's a liability defensively, guys.
What about if St. Louis moves Shattenkirk? Do they maybe go out and acquire Keith Yandle? They're a good defensive. I'm not saying that he's going to St. Louis.
A structure like that makes it easier to put him in there for sure.
Yeah.
Like Arizona kind of had before. Now, this will be an interesting one, but I'm not sure how many teams. You mentioned, like, if you look at it, I hear the music, but if you look at it, Dallas, LA has no cap space right now, so how are they making it work?
Well, it's projected that on deadline day they'll have about $2.6 million in cap space. So unless your money in, money out gets real tight. In any event, much more on that as we get closer to the trade deadline. This is it for NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Riverview Health Center Foundation, Cycle on Life, Keener Jerseys, and Rady Fitness Center. Big thanks to our guest, Dave Festchuk of the Toronto Star, and to Craig Heisinger of the Winnipeg Jets. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Props to producer Alex for the great job. For Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.